If you'd like to listen to Radio Free Brooklyn when you're not in front of your computer, please consider downloading our free mobile app for iPhone and Android, available in the App Store for iPhone or the Google Play Store for Android.
Please be sure to subscribe to our monthly newsletter for the latest news about new programming and upcoming RFB events. You can sign up at radiofreebrooklyn.org/newsletter.
You're listening to Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. Time to get embarrassed with us.
Oi.
Hello.
We made it.
Whoa.
Another week. It's happening.
Oh no.
What are you stuck under?
My rock.
What? That's a heavy rock. Get out from under that rock.
It's too heavy.
Okay, let me excuse me one second. Okay. I pushed it. It's gone. Now you could feel much more ease.
I can't walk.
But that's okay, because we're doing the show. We're right here.
My legs were stuck to the bottom of that rock.
Okay. Before the end of the show,
I'm a torso on this chair.
Remind me before we end the show to put your pieces back together, and we'll be able to have a Humpty Dumpty great time.
They fit together like those train track pieces that are really a great throwback on a show called Lost and Rewound.
It's true. And we do this every week here on Radio Free Brooklyn from 3 to 4 p.m. every Thursday. That's Rachel Teichman, the walking torso, or the non-walking torso.
Yes.
And I am the man with way more many limbs than he deserves, Alon Danziger. And this is going to be a fun week. I don't know where Will is. I don't know where Catherine is, but that's okay.
We can try calling him again.
That'd be funny. But I don't know if he'll pick up. So
we could try.
It's not going to work, because this is in the future. So either way, I'm sure if somebody is listening to this now and wanted to call him, they'd be like, oh, he is picking up. But what? And they don't understand. The time-space continuum just breaks.
I don't think time travel can work.
No.
Because where are all the people time traveling? Why haven't we run into them yet?
Maybe we have and we don't know.
Why didn't they say anything?
I mean, do you know what kind of laws are being broken if you do, like, out yourself?
Listen, I've failed Algebra 1 multiple times, so no, I don't.
If you are interested in listening to past episodes of this rabble-rousing affair, and where we dig deep into your rough and raw sounds from the past to connect the dots between then and now, we've done a lot of episodes of the show, and you should go and check out our archives on SoundCloud, iTunes, Podomatic, or Spotify. And also, if you go to our profile page, radiofreebrooklyn.org/LAR, and if you go down, pass below like the info, you'll see there's like the megaphone player, and you just get all our episodes right there. Boom, you have it. You don't have to leave the site. It's easy. You can you don't even need to have a head or arms or legs. You're just a torso like Rachel.
megaphone.
Yes, at any rate, in so much as what we have planned for this week of LNR, let us begin on a journey that we don't know where we're going to go, but we just got to start the car and see what happens.
How do you drive a car with no legs?
I'll take care of it. You just guide in the passenger seat.
Well, I think they have accessibility things for that now.
No time to talk. Accessibility be damned. Let's go. Madeline Long is a Brooklyn-based singer-songwriter hailing from Jacksonville, Florida. You might have seen her fronting the band Jury Duty in and around North Brooklyn. She's played Sunnyvale, Footlight even, and also Old Sounds, I believe The Glove as well, and so many more. She is also, if I may say so myself, a fantastic writer who has read her work at the Same Page Reading Series at the Red Room above KGB Bar in Manhattan. She creates That's all you need to know. And right now, she is here with us this week on LNR. Hello, Madeline.
Sup? What's up, Milan?
What is up? This is so great. I'm so happy after all these months we can finally make this happen.
I know, finally.
You are with old audio that you're going to be sharing with us this week.
Yes, yes, I am. That's... lots of fun old audio.
Yeah. Do you normally look at yourself or listen to yourself from the past, or do you try to avoid it?
I mean, I mostly try to avoid it, honestly.
Sure.
Yeah. A lot of my old recordings I have like on private, or, you know, like just so I never have to look at them or see them.
Of course.
This is a very special occasion.
Are you, first of all, as the gentleman by the name of Craig Ferguson once asked every night, are you getting enough oxygen?
Maybe. I think so.
This is the first time that you've been on a podcast in how long? Eight years?
In many, many years.
And would you say that it was an experience much like this one where, at the very least, at the very core, it was focusing on your music?
It was focused on music that I was involved in, but it wasn't focused on like my personal music. It was like a band that I was in back in the day.
What kind of band?
Like a twee indie pop rock band.
In Florida.
Yeah, in Jacksonville.
And everybody was from Jacksonville, or did you like travel around?
No, everyone in the band was from Jacksonville, but we did tour a lot.
Where did you guys travel to?
Actually, all over the U.S. We did like East Coast, West Coast.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
And well, I was like a teenager then, so.
And were all the other members teenagers as well?
No, they were much older than I was.
I see.
So I'm getting a Joan Jett vibe.
Oh, yeah. Did you guys? I'm Joan Jett. I don't know. That's the secret.
I drive by your house all the time when I go to see my relatives in Long Island.
Yeah, I see you. It's creepy.
Rockville Center is a small place. what I was going to say is you're the youngest member of a band, all mostly male? Or?
Yeah, no, it was all dudes.
Okay.
Again, with the Joan Jett vibe.
Thank you.
Well, how did you come about joining this band?
I was in like a duo, like a singer-songwriter duo with my best friend back in Jacksonville. And we used to play like local shows, very low-key, casual things when we were in high school. And someone from a local band happened to see us play, and their friend had been looking for a female vocalist for his band. And they spread the word that, you know, I was playing music and whatever. And they got us in touch.
Before this happened, did you see firsthand a lot of friends kind of go through the same ringer in terms of, you know, playing a lot of shows and being seen? Does it seem like there's a real industry around a city like Jacksonville when it comes to young musicians playing around? Or I mean Florida in general, I think having that microcosm of entertainment epicenter really kind of lends itself to even somewhere like outside of Orlando in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there's like a definite goal of local musicians trying to, I don't know, like advertise themselves in such a way that they have to tour to like become more popular. Obviously, that's like what all musicians have to do nowadays. Specifically in Jacksonville, you have to play like a lot of shows locally to get any sort of following.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there you can tour. But like if you don't have any sort of local following, like no one is going to give a shit about what you're doing.
Right. No, I mean, it's certainly a scene enough within itself that you really have to go through the ranks and be a known entity before you can really think about even getting anywhere else. You have to roll with like a very, you know, you have to be
in the scene.
You have to
for
roll
sure.
with it. Exactly.
Yeah. You have to like know certain people. And if you don't know those people, or you aren't like, you know, in, and I feel like that's like pretty common no matter where you're playing music.
Did you like being in when you were a teenager?
I didn't consider myself in back then. I felt like I was sort of an outsider, actually. Like I was just sort of like brought in because I was like this younger random person. I didn't feel like I was like actually in the scene back then.
So you felt like a total alien when you were going to these shows, like you?
Oh, 100%.
That's a lot of growing up that you're forced to have to do when you actually are hired to be a part of a band when you're not even out of high school.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's I can't even like fathom it. It's wild. This is like around the time of MySpace too, right?
Oh my God, yes.
So the band had a MySpace page?
I don't even remember. I mean, probably.
I mean, that's exposure. I mean, yeah. I think that, I mean, I don't know what the status of my X year when MySpace music was popping off, but having enough of a social media presence in like the Wild West days, so to speak.
Right, yeah. Yes, the Wild West MySpace days.
Shit. I mean, have you guys used Friendster?
No.
Yeah.
You did, we'll get back to that in a second, but how is the exposure? I want to talk about that a little more in terms of like being out there and getting a chance to, I guess, do what YouTube ends up lending to actually you performing with another band out in the open,
as
opposed to just in your bedroom.
With that band, the exposure, and there wasn't really a lot of exposure. I feel like I probably got a lot more exposure just like doing my own shit and putting it on YouTube than like my actual band that was signed to a label.
The stuff that you were creating personally was more fulfilling even then than what you were doing with a professional band.
Personally more fulfilling.
You were playing guitar, right?
In the band, I was just singing.
You were just singing.
Yeah. I mean, when we played live, I would play rhythm guitar, but like on recordings, I was just singing.
Got it.
Yeah. Sometimes live, I would play tambourine because, you know, that's what the ladies can do. They can keep a beat, apparently.
Who's to say that that you women can't do, you know, all of the, I guess it's like a miscellaneous sort of like, yeah, you get to do everything else that we don't want to
do. Exactly. Yeah, I can play the kazoo and I can like clap.
If you're a willing participant, I guess it's one thing.
Yeah.
Do you like to play like kazoos and harmonicas and
fuck
all sorts
no.
of things? Okay. I mean, I'm saying if you ever need a band and you need like someone to rock a bongo.
Okay, I mean, maybe a kazoo.
I'll rock a kazoo. I'll rock a harmonica horn or a straight up harmonica. Give me bongos. I mean, if you ever need one.
Okay, yeah.
If you ever want to collaborate, Madeline.
Totally.
I'll play cello for you.
Oh my God, love it. This is really just such a team. Cello, bongos. I'm so into it. And I can just clap. It'll be great.
Wait.
So three rhythm instruments.
Yeah, nothing else.
Just to entertain me for a second, you were talking about Friendster, that you did have a profile, and I was thinking about it recently, and I'm just realizing how social media is such a validation game, but Friendster really had the validation game on lock because they invented it.
Yes, totally. I was in like middle school when I had a Friendster, and I thought I was like the coolest person because I had one. I was like really into it.
What most into it were you? Like in the way that you were carefully curating your persona or the actual getting, you know, validation from other people that you were friends with?
I mean, it was definitely both, but I think that I was more focused on the carefully curating my persona for sure. Then that carried into numerous other social media platforms that now exist.
Sure. But it started at Friendster effectively.
Def.
What would someone see if they went to that profile in terms of like photos? Like, what does Madeline Long at 15 want to sport?
I don't know. It would probably be like pictures of me at Warped Tour or some shit.
Sure.
Me with braces wearing like a Motion City soundtrack t-shirt or something.
Yeah. Yes.
Or like a Hello Goodbye shirt or something.
What's that?
It's like a... It's like a nerdy, like, math rock, pop punk, cutesy twee band from...
Have you heard of them, Rachel? I have not heard of this band.
Something about this sounds really familiar, and it's like digging up a part of something that I forgot
existed. That you've
existed.
Long since buried.
I don't know that I ever intentionally listened to them, but I think they were a part of my life somehow.
Oh my God,
through
I
some
loved
kind
them.
Of internet reasoning.
Yeah.
If you go to the emo subsets of the internet... Back in the day, I think that's where I came across. Because there were like graphics, right?
Yes.
Like people were making GIFs based on their music, right?
Yes.
Okay, I'm not wrong.
It was like very cartoony too. Yes. Like the artwork for their like albums and stuff. They were very into like cutesy emo, like sort of cartoony things.
And it's really cringe now. But back then, if you were the right kind of person, it's what you lived on.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was that person.
Amazing.
So yeah, it would be some embarrassing picture of me like wearing like pink eyeshadow and like under eye eyeliner wearing a like loose fitting Hot Topic t-shirt of a an embarrassing band.
Yep. At 14, 15, I was all about wearing band shirts. Because I was super hopped up on the adrenaline of the shows that I was going to see and going to see live concerts in my in my middle school age. It was like my way of qualifying how cool that I could probably be with the older kids. And it didn't really work out when I saw No Doubt, because I brought a No Doubt shirt to school and, you know, I wore it a lot. But these, I guess, 10th graders, or sorry, 11th graders, I guess, at the time, would always like poke fun and say, No Doubt rules! No Doubt rules! Kind of like, as if like it was O'Doyle rules from Billy Madison.
Oh, no! So in 7th grade, I sported a Slipknot Messenger backpack.
Okay.
Ooh, I've seen those.
Yeah, and it came, but I was 12. I was 12.
That's amazing.
And it came with a matching folder and pencil. And I was also, the year before, I was rocking an Apocalyptica t-shirt, which I still wear. So I was like this little 4 foot tall death metal child.
Yeah.
I definitely wanted to stand out.
You did?
Yeah. I mean, I probably, by trying to stand out, just like fit in with everyone else who was also trying to stand out in that time period.
What made you pick up a guitar for the first time?
I had always wanted to play guitar. I come from like a very musical family. My dad's whole side of the family is involved with music or plays music in some way or records or produces or you know, sound engineers or whatever. And my parents are big music lovers. So I just like grew up being very into that. And my parents got me my first guitar when I was in the 3rd grade.
Wow.
Because I always wanted one. Like even before that. And I used to get really scared when I went to sleep at night and like crawl into my parents' bed, like in the middle of the night. And the way my parents convinced me to not do that anymore was bribing me with a guitar. They were like, if you sleep in your own bed for 1 week, we will buy you a guitar. And I was like, yeah, okay. And then I slept in my bed by myself for the rest of my life. But like I had a guitar and it was amazing. And I taught myself how to play, various Christmas songs. I remember specifically Frosty the Snowman being a big one that I was proud of in the 3rd grade. I briefly took lessons and then I kind of just like got more and more into it as time went on and started writing my own songs and stuff.
Would you recall some of the first songs that you wrote where, I mean, obviously you didn't necessarily record them, but like you definitely wrote them down and did you save them?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I have a very embarrassing notebook at my apartment from, I don't know, maybe like 10, 12 years ago of like songs that I first started writing in early high school.
Do you remember the lyrics to the first one?
Oh, God.
This is a trick question. I know them. No, kidding.
I know one of the first ones off the top of my head was called Perfect Mouth. And it started, how do you talk with a perfect mouth? The tips of your teeth have figured me out.
Wow.
What?
And that is like
boom.
One of the first songs. That was probably like the 3rd song that I wrote back then.
Pretty nifty wordplay you got there.
Thank you.
For the age that of that was
16, yeah. 15.
Before we get to our clips, I wanted to address the fact that I had mentioned when we introduced you to this at the top that Jury Duty is a band that is unfortunately not currently in operation. And I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you.
Because you and the band are quite talented. I was lucky enough to see you guys rock an amazing show, if I may say so.
Thank you.
But I forgot the name of the place. Is that the Glove? That was the
You saw us at the Glove.
I saw. It was a very hard to find venue.
No, it's like a hole in the wall. It's supposed to be.
Does that music that you are making? Because I won't lie. I mean, I did not want to prep myself personally. I know Rachel hasn't heard any of this. I haven't really heard any of this, I don't think. I maybe just like a few seconds, but the kind of music that you're creating now, how would you say, just in some kind of way, in terms of the lyrics, in terms of like the mood of the music that you're writing versus what you were kind of going for then, how have you matured into where you are now and the Jury Duty Madeline Long versus YouTube guitarist? Madeline Long?
I think that, I mean, definitely back then when I was just like on my own or writing songs for me and my best friend, I was just like very singer-songwritery based. I loved very early Sharon Van Etten back then.
Remember who Sharon Van Etten is again?
She's like, I mean, she's really big now, but her early stuff is, she's very much a singer-songwriter, like acoustic guitar, very like simple chords. Like it's all about like the melody that she's singing. I couldn't play a lot of complicated shit on the guitar. So I used like what I knew and sort of tried my best to expand from there, just being like, me and my guitar. My friend Beverly, who was in the duo with me, she would like sing harmony.
That was the best friend
you're talking about? Yeah. Okay. She would sing like harmony over that. And yeah, it was like, it was cute. It was like very simple and like sweet. And I think that Jury Duty was, I mean, it was a full band. We had like we had a bass player and rhythm guitar and main, like lead guitar and drums. So it was like a much fuller sounding, like sort of harder rock band, like a little with like punk vibes.
But it suited the aesthetic to the kind of representation you're trying to offer as an artist.
Yeah.
So yeah. It wasn't too different.
No,
so
it was like the skeletal versions of the songs could be singer-songwriter songs.
Yeah.
But in the band, we sort of like filled them out and wrote specific guitar parts or riffs or like bass lines or whatever that made them sound fuller and like harder and more intense than like the singer-songwriter thing that I was doing back when I was in high school.
We're going to play a video right now, of which the audio is the dominant feature, and it's called Wine Song, and from the image it appears that it is you and Beverly here in this video. You know, as it's only fair, we like to be, you know, very, very kind to our guests, and we want to be kind to the guests' other voices that are being heard. What would you think Beverly would think of hearing this right now? If she was in the room, or if she was, you know, on the phone listening to this.
She would be like, Madeline, why are you putting this anywhere?
Okay.
This is like a very non-serious video.
Hey, I'm
embarrassing myself.
I don't know about you, Rachel, but I'm into what I'm hearing.
Yeah, me too. You're really hyping this up for me, and I'm extremely excited.
Oh, God.
Onward. First exhibit.
There will be lots of wine. And I'm sure you'll be on my mind. And I might lock myself inside. Someone else is back for a while, and I will call you at the worst time. You might answer with a long sigh. You might ask me where everybody is tonight, and I'll have nothing to say, but it will be okay, cause you never liked me anyway, and we'll stay on the phone, but I'll still feel alone, cause we I go so far away, so far away.
So today on Gossip and Gabby, we're going to discuss how every time we're playing a song for a camera and we fuck it up, it ends up being the best fucking song and video of that song ever, but we can't use it or put it anywhere because, you know, we fuck up at the end. And then, when we do a song perfectly through and go back and watch it, it's terrible!
Madeline kind of took over this episode. So, don't really know what else to say.
It's our luck that it's gonna suck.
I mean, I was in high school. Can I get a pass?
Rachel, thoughts?
So, first of all, I felt that that had, like, the actual song and performance had the level of dedication that you can only get from teenagers. I thought it was good, but I think that quality and all that comes with experience, but the dedication only happens when you're that age. And that level of emotion, when you feel that you fucked things up,
mm-hmm.
only happens that purely at that time.
Yes, I think that is true. I definitely felt my failures and mistakes very, very extremely during that time.
And then you go back to being cool.
Yeah, and then I'm totally fine.
I think that's great.
Yeah, it's like when you like are in high school and you like fall down in the hallway and make a fool of yourself.
Yes.
And then you immediately get up because you're like, well, you know, I have to pretend like that never happened.
Oh, yeah.
I like your haircut in this.
Thank you. I had no hair.
You kept your hair short when you were in high school?
Yes.
It was a very fashionable, sporty, sort of Winona Ryder-esque
That was haircut. Literally what I was going for.
Shit,
so.
No fucking way.
I was like, Girl Interrupted is my favorite movie. I am trying to be Winona Ryder in Girl Interrupted.
All right.
So that was the goal. So thank you so much for validating me.
No, I'm on board with it. Come on. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I wish that... more people were as cool as that when I was growing up, but I suppose if you're taking a haircut, no, if you're going to take a hair nod from one celebrity, I think Winona Ryder is a pretty good one.
I agree. Thank you.
I wish that I had a better one. I think Conan O'Brien is still mine.
Yeah, sure.
Well, not anymore because my hair is much longer, but there was a point where I was like, yeah.
Can I cut your hair?
No.
I'll
no.
show you. I cut my friend's hair and I'll show you the job I did.
Do it. Do it right now.
After we're done. I must take a look at this. We have another video here. Actually, it's, as you said, this is audio specifically. No video attached to this, but an original song that you wrote called Older Boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beverly, my old bandmate / friend from Jacksonville, and I wrote it together. When we were in high school.
Oh, that's flaming.
Something new, stay for a day, maybe two. I could be your everything. Do 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 do.
Gorgeous.
I liked it.
Oh, thanks, guys. Those
harmonies were on point, man.
That was like our whole thing was the harmonies.
What were you pulling from inspiration wise? There was, I felt like a lot of like Dolores O'Riordan or Joni Mitchell in there.
Yeah. Beverly is classically trained in vocal. She like majored in classical singing for our entire school upbringing. And she can harmonize with like literally anything. So I could sing any note and she would be able to like harmonize with it perfectly, beautifully, no matter what.
Perfect pitch.
That's a skill.
Yeah. She's very, very talented. She has like the most angelic voice. And I kind of just was like, we should play music together and I'll be the person who just writes the songs and you can make it sound good, basically.
How many good duos begin, I suppose.
Yes, exactly.
Well, what made you stop making music with her?
Well, I moved here
You were making music with her all throughout the time that you were living in Florida, though?
Yeah. When I would go back and visit, we would play shows sometimes.
Oh, that's so cool.
The two of us. But we kind of just like stopped doing that. And she actually plays by herself now around Jacksonville. So
you're in New York City now for how many years?
Almost six.
How long did it take for you to dive into playing music with other folks when you arrived here?
Maybe like 2 years, actually.
So you really didn't open yourself up to that in that kind of way just yet.
Yeah, I mean, for the first year that I was living here, I was playing guitar alone in my apartment and posting YouTube videos.
We have more to listen to after we come back from this break. I think we're going to be hearing actually a little more of post-Florida Madeline and when you have arrived to the city officially, I do believe, unless I might have that timeline wrong.
Oh, no. Yeah, there's yeah.
The stuff you're going to be sharing is stuff that's been here when you was written when you got here.
Yeah, yeah.
After you got here.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. When we return, we will hear more of the sounds of Madeline Long.
Oh, great.
That's exactly what we need for the lead out. This is Lost and Rewound
on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Be back in a minute.
Radio Free Brooklyn is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a free and open platform to our community and promote media literacy, education, and free expression. We rely primarily on donations from listeners like you. To help support our mission, we invite you to make a one-time donation or monthly pledge at radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. Every cent helps us to continue to stay on the air. So please support independent community media by pledging whatever you can afford. All contributions are tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law. Again, that's radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate.
It's flaming in here.
You keep saying that, and you realize that Madeline's response before was very appropriate.
I was just confused.
So, yeah, you're right. That was appropriate. And, you know, I just went with it.
We do have one more slice of the high school, Madeline. You have longer hair here.
Yeah, I do. I was trying to grow it out. It's an awkward length there.
Awkward, you say?
In my opinion, yes.
You weren't trying to go for anybody specifically, or this is just like how your hair was naturally when you were younger and you're like giving it a go for the first time since?
Yeah, it was like I was trying to grow out my pixie cut, and that was where it was at that time.
All right. Here are you and Beverly singing an original song called Stop Saying You Love Me.
Mm-hmm. I'd rather die with him instead.
Oh, yeah.
I love that you could see her getting up and turning off the video.
Isn't that a classic YouTube making?
Yes.
The quintessential getting up and having to go across the room to turn it off.
To press the stop.
Mm-hmm. Nope. You can't just use a remote control. You got to get up.
Yep.
You need like an extended mouse. Like,
oh my God.
All the way over there. I'm just like envisioning like this like setup of like making sure you got the perfect way to stop videos without having to actually, like, God forbid, get up from out of your chair. That was really sweet though. I like that.
Cool.
I liked it too.
Overlooking the last part. Now, I was gonna say, that's your bed or is that Beverly's bed?
Oh, that's my that's my room.
That's a very Florida floral.
Yep. I was, yep, it's Florida, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, you say?
Yep. I mean, there's a reason I'm here now.
Tell us about that. What made you decide to move to New York after all?
I always wanted to live here, and I always wanted to not live in Jacksonville, and specifically Florida. So it made sense.
You went to college in Florida.
I didn't go to college.
You didn't go to college.
Yeah.
Did you entertain going somewhere for undergrad?
I went to like a community college. I took like a couple of courses in Jacksonville before I moved here, but that was it.
Yep. It's okay. You did all right because you don't have to pay any student loans or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I am debt free, baby.
Good place to be now.
Yes.
Rachel's nodding along. Rachel, you just graduated college, so.
And I'm in graduate school.
So there you go. Oh, you don't have to worry about paying anything yet, really.
Not yet.
But it's just going to amass.
Hopefully it'll all just go away.
I hope so. I don't know where it's going to go, but I mean, we could all use it to be. I've just recently myself paid it all off. So.
Wow, congratulations.
I can't take all the responsibility. It was a mutual effort on my and my parents' part. We were both doing it together. So, mm-hmm. But we made it work. We did it together with great patience over how long? 13 years?
Yeah. Jesus.
14 years? Yeah, exactly.
It'll probably take me probably that long.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the setup that I have, because even if there is some sort of student loan relief program set up, I have too much privilege, and the way that my loans are is that they're not going away.
Yeah, at least for the now. At least no,
like never.
Sadness.
So,
Madeline, when you got to the city, what was your forte? You weren't going for an education, but you were going just to be here.
Yeah, I really just wanted to get out of where I spent my entire life.
But you could have gone to California.
Yeah, no, but I'm definitely more of a New York kind of gal.
Had you visited New York before?
Yes, yeah.
You had?
I had. My first trip to New York, I was 16. I came with my mom. We had like a cute little summer trip where we stayed in the Chelsea and, you know.
Was that culture shock for you?
Surprisingly, no. I felt like immediately at ease when we came here. I just felt like I was at home, which I guess was sort of a shock in its own way.
Yeah.
Considering I never really felt at home where I was from. So yeah, I kind of just like always imagined that I would end up here. And I played shows here with that band that I was touring with a few times. We played CMJ.
So. Oh, that's nice.
I sort of like became somewhat familiar with New York before I moved here.
You know, Jacksonville, from everything I understand, I've never been there, but I'm understanding that it's a square mileage wise, it's the largest city in America or one
yes.
of
yes. Yeah. Land wise, it's the largest city in the U.S.
So you go from a city like that, right? Which is more or less a sprawling, unfamiliar wasteland of people who, you know, it's suburbs. It's not really much as much city. It's more suburbs. Is that correct?
It's very flat and are like, I mean, it is a city, but the city areas of it are pretty much empty. Yeah. Like our downtown is sort of like gutted. It's become more lively since I've moved because that's
sure.
my luck. But, yeah. But yeah, it's like the city aspects of it are pretty not non-existent.
When you moved to New York, where did you live?
When I first moved here, I was with my boyfriend at the time staying in our friend's apartment in Soho while he was on his honeymoon for 2 weeks. So the first 2 weeks I lived in New York, I was living in Soho on like Spring Street, like right there. It was crazy. And then after that, I moved into an apartment in Crown Heights and I lived there for about a year.
So you've been in Brooklyn ever since then?
Yeah, and I've been in Brooklyn ever since.
But your first excursion in New York was very...
it was very...
Not a Jacksonville experience.
Yeah, no. No.
I mean, you're literally in the epicenter of everything.
Yeah.
I can't think of a busier effing subway stop than the Prince Street R.
Oh, it was crazy. And I worked at the Anthropology over there. It was nuts.
Okay.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was a nightmare.
There's a special circle of hell for retail. And you're combating the special circle of hell by doing more of what you do best, which is creating music in this case. Were you writing a lot of poetry just freeform back then too?
I wasn't really writing much poetry back then. I was really more writing songs.
And what's this first song we're going to be hearing? It's called Ice.
Oh, that came much later. That is a very short, very rough song that I wrote during a very dark time in my life. So...
That this is how many years into the city? 4?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say like 4 years in.
Okay.
Maybe 3, actually.
Okay. So it's still early Madeline Long NYC experiences.
Yeah.
Saying about how it was written during a very hard time, a very rough emotional time.
Yeah, I feel like you can't even hear, I mean, you definitely can't hear anything that I'm saying in that recording because it was like the only time I recorded that. And it was very much just like, I need to do this in some way. Like, I need to get this out in some fashion. So,
have you ever heard of the mantra to write something down and then immediately crumple it up into a ball and then throw it out and never see it again?
Yes.
What do you think about that?
I respect it and I understand it, but I'm like way too sentimental to just like throw something away like that.
Yeah.
So even though I obviously never planned on doing anything with like this horrible lo-fi recording of a song that, you know, I did on my phone, I don't think I could bring myself to like throw anything like that away.
Sure. No, I think it's about the fact that, and maybe I'm just speculating here, that in the moment when your back is against the wall and you need to do something, you need a catharsis, you need a way to release it. And it doesn't necessarily have to be put out there for the world to hear. But as long as you're hearing it yourself, and maybe you don't have to necessarily listen to it right after,
right?
But you record it.
Yeah.
Just for posterity and to give yourself that perspective to say, like, this is what I sounded like when I was at like a one versus the like maybe I don't know. Are, would you say like you're like you're at like an 8 or a 9 or a 7 now, like happiness
now?
Wise?
Oh.
Versus when that
I didn't
like,
mean to snort.
It's okay. I'm comparatively, I'm not trying to like
comparatively. Oh yeah, I'm at like a fucking 100. That okay. that was low.
Yeah, yeah. And so you got this experience to at least in the moment just find the first thing and just record something. And you can't hear any of the lyrics, but is there any of those lyrics that you remember writing?
Yeah. I mean, I myself know all what I
would,
was saying.
Would you be comfortable sharing them since we didn't hear all of them?
Yeah. It starts, I miss you like hell and I don't care who knows it. Your eyes are a well where I've fallen and over it grows a mountain of snow. Memories of you feel like blades cutting ice. Remember when you asked what the inside of my heart looks like? Empty buses at night. Everyone knows I'm a violent romantic. I've written this song 100 times before you. And if you think that means that I loved any of them, just know that that isn't true.
It's really, really stunning.
Thank you.
That sounds like someone who was very hurt and affected, and you just needed to just put it out there. And I love the visuals. Really, it's a very good use of wordplay and rhyming everything and fitting it all in and making it just sound very symmetrical, I think is the word I'm looking for.
Thank you.
I don't know if I'm the only person that thinks that, but I thought that's the case.
I think that was a good word for it, symmetrical.
Symmetrical.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
I'm a little mathematical when it comes down to it every now and again. When you write something with that kind of imagery, did this sort of feel like a door was opening to not necessarily having to put music on all of your poems?
Yeah, I think that actually that around that time, like very shortly after that, is when I started writing poetry again.
Did you ever like make a chapbook or like any kind of like put your work in any zines or anything?
I'm not really public about my poems.
You're not public about your poems, but you are public about your music. What? Where's the difference? Are you more comfortable with your musicianship versus your lyricism?
Yeah, I think I am. Definitely, like, in regards to, like, playing in a band, I'm more comfortable sharing the spotlight than I am, you know, like, this is a poem that I wrote, and it has nothing to do with anyone else. No one has any say-so in my poetry, except for me. In my mind, the criticism is going to all be on me. So I'm kind of like weirder about putting my poetry out there, I guess.
I never really did it either. It's sort of like a not a hobby per se. It's an art, but it's a personal art.
Yeah. I have a lot of poetry.
Sick.
Yeah.
Poetry is so sick and so dope.
And only some of it is public. Like very little of it is public.
Yeah.
I went to school for it. I majored in poetry or creative writing and did poetry pretty much the entire time I was in college and kind of wore myself out really thin on it. When you start writing so much and you completely lose everything that you want to talk about and write about because you've written about everything that's happening up until like that moment, you just write yourself into the present tense and it's just like, oh God, what am I going to write about now? Because if you're going from past experiences, And you've written about all of them already that you feel like you can talk about and write about with some kind of level of logic from a poetic standpoint.
Yeah. I unfortunately feel like I have like way too much ongoing sadness to write about. So that has never really been a problem for me.
Same. There's pretty much only two moods that I write poetry in, and that's the most common one, is like in a really dark place.
Yeah.
We have time for one more song, of which is a cover. Tell us about when you first got into the magnetic fields.
Oh, wow. So my ex-boyfriend, who I met in Jacksonville, who had me join his band, you know, the one that we toured around the States.
I gathered.
Yeah. He really loved the magnetic fields, and I was a young, impressionable girl. I knew like a couple of songs, and he was like, oh, well, here's this mix CD of magnetic field songs that I have. And I immediately was like, this is the greatest lyricism ever. all of their songs are so brilliant. I just immediately connected with Stephen Merritt a lot.
He's a very interesting, enigmatic fellow from everything I gathered. I've only one album, but it's a big one. It's
69 Love Songs. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Literally that's like big.
A masterpiece.
3 CD disc set of just very interesting pop songs, including I'm the Luckiest Guy on the Lower East Side.
Oh, yeah.
I Want a Zebra.
Oh, God.
There's a lot of songs. It's a fun listen, but I haven't listened to it in a while, admittedly. It's a heavy listen. It's one of those listens that, you know, when you want to begin, you don't want to stop. So what made you decide to cover this song, though, specifically? What's it called?
Yeah, Oh Yeah.
Yeah, Oh Yeah.
Actually, me and my ex-boyfriend of that band did a cover of it because it's a duet, sort of. A very, like, darkly comic duet. We recorded it, and it sounded great, and then we broke up, and I never heard it again. I don't know what happened to the recording. It was, like, professionally recorded, and it just disappeared into the ether.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like really love singing that song, so I kind of a few years later just thought like I'll just sing it myself and recorded it myself, so I'm doing both parts.
All right, doing double time here on Yeah Oh Yeah by the Magnetic Fields, covered in 2014.
I don't know,
something
like that,
pre dark timeline era. Let's just go with that.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Are you out of love with me? Are you running tipsy? Do I drive you up the tree? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Do I drive you up the wall? Do you dread every phone call? Can you ask me at all?
When you hear a song like that, when you had a strong memory with somebody who you did that song with, do you reclaim the memory of that song?
Yeah, definitely. Very much so.
Bury the hatchet a little bit.
Yeah. I definitely felt that way when I recorded it.
Where could people see you perform? If you're not doing jury duty, then you're clearly holding court somewhere.
Well, I'm actually reading at Sarah's series, Same Page Reading Series at KGB next month. September 11th, actually.
September 11th at 7
it's
o'clock.
It's at 7, yeah. 7 p.m. at KGB.
Nikki Meinhardt and Sarah Madges' show will feature our friend Madeline Long next month. And you could follow Madeline on Instagram at Madeline J. Long. You have a cat.
I have a cat named Princess Carolyn. After the BoJack Horseman character, Princess Carolyn, who is a cat.
Perfect.
Yes.
Perfect.
Oh my God, I hate that I just made that joke with you at the same time.
Mind meld!
I was like, oh God, I'm making this.
Long here on Lost and Rewound this week. Thanks so much, Madeline.
Thank you, guys.
You're a team player.
It was wonderful.
You were great.
Oh, thanks.
If you, like Madeline, are inspired to share anything of that confessional nature, any voice memos, MP3s of your old music from when you were younger, and you have anything you want to share and pitch us, by all means, hit us up at lostandrewound@radiofreebrooklyn.org. We have to go, but before we go, we're recording from the Rec Room here in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn, and there's more than just Lost and Rewound. What else happens at the Rec Room? Well, Rachel's going to tell you all about that.
Radio Free Brooklyn Teen Squad Live is part of an after-school program for local teenagers designed to learn media literacy through media making using a hands-on approach guided by local professionals. If you'd be interested in participating or donating to this program, please go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/teensquad.
Thank you so much, Rachel.
You're welcome. Well, I found my legs.
Yay!
Yay!
Radio Free Brooklyn.
Lost and Rewound. Back at you next week. Boo, boo, boo.
Yeah, is she in my bag?
But I definitely need to find a report.
Oh!
Oh, there she is!
There she is!
Oh,
oh my God!
You're cute.
Oh!
And you're not going to distract me anymore. So
hello.
Why is there... Oh, is that... You're using a measuring spoon as a water bowl.
Yeah, but she's
a fucker. That is so cute.
Yeah, she's a fucker.